Good Morning Pensacola. Andrew McKay and the Pensacola Morning News starts right now.
Trying to corral this thing in, and I think it was very, very clear at that point that if you are interested in this property, you need to be here on April 6th. It was in the newspaper, it was on the radio. If you weren't living under a rock, you knew it, right? So to your question, Commissioner Berry, I'll be prepared to move forward tonight. If people are interested, they need to be here. If they're not interested, they probably aren't here.
So this is Commissioner Jeff Bergosh talking during the agenda review last Thursday for a Escambia County Commission meeting where the topic was OLF 8. If you're not familiar, OLF 8 is this outlying field, the outlying landing field 8, which was used to be owned by the Navy, and it's located, you know, west of Navy Federal on 9 Mile. It's that big open space of nothing, and it used to be where they'd land helicopters, and then we worked out a deal where we bought some land in Santa Rosa County, and then we built a brand new landing field there, and then we swapped it with the Navy, and basically they took over that, and then we have this, and we're, you know, somewhere shy, like $15-17 million into it. You know, I hear 15 from Jeff Bergosh. I thought it was 17, but it, you know, in that vicinity. Okay. And the old idea, the original idea was, let's put light industrial on that property. Let's create jobs, right? Let's bring in companies that are going to create jobs. Let's have another industrial park, you know, because that's working very well for Santa Rosa County right now. It has not worked as well for Escambia County, although I think reports of Escambia County's empty, land parks is, some degree, it's accurate. The ones up north are empty. The Tech Park downtown is a very vivid example of a failure in all of this. But there are other ones that have worked out pretty well. And the question is, what about OLFA? Well, there was this big, long conversation about what to do with that land once we got it. And it was years just to figure what we were going to do, what they so-called a master plan, a compromise between what Commissioner Bergosh, it's his district, wanted, which was jobs and businesses, and what the residents wanted, which was, you know, places to eat, although he wants that too. Rather famously, he wants a steak place where you can have a glass of wine. But, you know, they want a local town center. They want maybe a library. They want maybe a school, you know, maybe more than one school. They wanted a fire station. They should have built the fire station that they built west on 9 Mile there. Anyway, and, you know, then the question about residential. Well, if you have residential, that's good because people can walk over to Navy Federal where they work, or they can walk to the amenities or to the whatever's going on at the town center. There's not a traffic issue on 9 Mile Road. Other background factors here are, we're going to be, you know, extending the Beulah Road is going to go up and hit the interstate in the next decade or so. I say that with, like, you know, somewhere in that time frame, we're going to have an interchange on I-10 that'll connect there. That means that the trucks that are likely to use the light industrial will have better access. People who work at Navy Federal will have better access. And people who live in that area will have better access to the interstate, alleviating some of the congestion along 9 Mile. Although now that the widening of 9 Mile is done, how much does that matter? Okay, that's sort of the backdrop. And, you know, it was a lot of contention over what to do with that site. And basically what you got was a design that nobody was really thrilled with, but everybody got something of what they wanted. Well, then you start getting, you know, an offer here or an offer there to do different things. And the commissioners sort of indicated, well, you know, we're sort of going to listen to the master plan, maybe the broad strokes of it. And then over time, what you've got now is basically this meeting on Thursday, where it was the meeting where people were supposed to show up. And you had two big offers so far, basically, one from Horton, D.R. Horton Homes, in conjunction with a company called Sterling, where the, you know, D.R. Horton was going to build the houses and Sterling was going to do the rest of the developing for the, you know, the retail and the, you know, medical office park and industrial and that kind of stuff. And then you had another offer from Breland, which was supposed to be more like the master plan, and they were better and they didn't have all the negatives that D.R. Horton carries with them, because they have a very negative perception for a lot of people about the quality of the homes that they build. Well, Breland didn't show up, and there you have D.R. Horton talking with Sterling and presenting to the board. So that's kind of where we are. Will Barrows, with Sterling Properties.
The original DPD plan had the industrial kind of up, let's see if you can see my mouse, up in here.
The northeast corner.
And we just felt like we needed to relocate that. It's, you know, the last thing you need is a bunch of, you know, people walking over from Navy Federal or the rec center wanting to have a beer after a softball game, and you got 18-wheelers driving up and down the main boulevard. So we felt the need to relocate that up to the top left corner. And with the new interchange and the widening of Frank Rita Road, you know, it's 1 mile from the exit to the first building. And we give them a nice little buffer up in that top left corner.
All right, so you might recall that one of the proposals here was to go ask Triumph for some money to build a road, basically, going along the eastern edge of the property from 9 Mile up to the Frank Rita Road on the backside, which would do great wonders for connectivity between Frank Rita Road and 9 Mile, would also allow the trucks, as he's talking about, to get into the industrial property. He says maybe it doesn't make so much sense to put all of the amenities across a big road from Navy Federal. Maybe it makes more sense to, you know, get them to go off Frank Rita out the back way up to the Beulah Interchange that'll eventually be there. There's some sense to that. The only problem is that in their design, you don't really have a good way to get from 9 Mile to Frank Rita. And so you lose some of that connectivity and you'd have to kind of go through town, so to speak, you know, in order to get anywhere. That was one of the concerns. But here was the big issue, okay? The big question was over how much residential. And once you accept the idea that there's going to have to be houses on the property for all kinds of reasons, what should they look like? And the lingering concern with D.R. Horton doing this build is they're going to look like crap. You know, they like they're going to look. That's the concern. That's what people keep saying is they don't like the way D.R. Horton homes look. Now, a lot of people live in D.R. Horton homes and love them. And there are a lot of people who look at D.R. Horton projects and they're like, oh, so, you know, there's a lot of conflict over that exact subject. It's not going to be like Seaside. You know, it's not going to be like this amazing, complicated, interesting, or at least it doesn't seem like. And that's part of the issue, too. But to get to that question of who should be building the homes, okay, again, homes that a lot of people live in and love, okay, I have no opinion one way or the other about D.R. Horton. I just don't. I feel like I don't know enough, but I know the allegation from a lot of people, okay? If I can judge on what people say, a lot of people dislike them, but a lot of people live in them, too, right? So where do you stand on all of that? I don't have a strong position one way or the other, so I try not to say, but, you know, that is. I feel like it'd be inappropriate because I don't know enough to say, okay, even though I know what other people say. So Will Berrios, he says, look, you're going to need to have population on that site in order to make it make sense financially for the businesses that are going to come.
We've got an anchor in Navy Federal. We've got an anchor, you know, with all of the existing, but, you know, we need to densify the site on with the residential. And with that, you know, Sterling looks at this as a partnership with D.R. Horton and, you know, the people, the team who's got the horsepower to pull this off is a good marriage. This project will be led by residential.
Again, that's Will Berrios, and he says, you know, in order to make it work, it's going to have lots of houses. Joe Everson, who's, excuse me, I think I said that, well, yeah, Will Berrios was from Sterling. Joe Everson was from D.R. Horton and lives here.
The reality of the situation is for this project to be successful, there needs to be some sort of a residential component. Now, there can be debate on how big of a residential component and what that looks like, but I'll just remind you guys that any changes or anything that moves forward, we have to get a development order through the county. So anything that is proposed has to be approved by you guys. So that brings me back to the point that there is going to be a residential component that's going to be necessary. There needs to be residential to attract the restaurants and the retail that the citizens are looking for.
You've got to have customer base, basically, is what he's saying. And in order to make that part of things work, you've got to have the people living there. You know, you're not going to get a town center of any kind unless you have a lot of people there. Maybe, I said maybe, you know, maybe not. I mean, 9 Mile's pretty well traveled. There's lots of people already. This is what they say, and I'm not opposed to it. I don't personally have a real strong opinion. I mean, a couple of things I think ought to have been done with the OLF-8 project, but, you know, I'm fine with a mix of industrial, if it ever happens, because it really is if it ever happens, light industrial, by the way, and, you know, anchor stores, and don't love the strip mall-y kind of concept. I think we can do better than that. And, you know, I'd like to see more interesting homes and more interesting layout of the land. But if we take something that we put a bunch of money into and we basically flip it for 25 or so, $23, $26 million profit, and we get places for people to live and amenities for people who live in Beulah, and, I mean, that generally seems like a win to me, and I'll tell you why, okay? I know the complaint about this project is that we keep doing different things. We keep not adhering to the master plan. And I have said the same thing, okay? And, you know, a lot of people make allegations about what's going on behind the scenes. And okay, I think a reasonable person can look at what's happening and say this. We're trying to get out of it without losing money, where we're behind now. We're trying to get something on the property. And there are stark examples all around of what happens when you don't act. The tech park downtown. We failed to get, like, App River to go in there because a couple of slow-to-act kind of moments. We don't have things on the Community Maritime Park because the city council can't make up its mind what it wants to do. They dithered, and now we have nothing still. So you have really good examples of what happens when politicians can't make a decision or when processes get hung up. The tech park is a little more complicated than that. But, you know, I think that, you know, even though I disagree, generally speaking, with kind of this tinkering with the master plan that we worked so hard to figure out, I think at some point your political leaders need to look at things and say, okay, here's what we actually have as an offer on the table. If we don't do something, it's entirely possible that 10 years from now, we still have grass out there, a giant grassy field that everybody looks at as an example of why government shouldn't buy property. They shouldn't. And why big old grand master plans don't always turn out the way you want, because sometimes the perfect nothing is worse than the imperfect something. So the commissioners voted to go ahead with D.R. Horton and Sterling. There's nothing done just yet because there's a lot of negotiations between here and there, including that they want to keep 100 or 100 plus acres of the property for development of the light industrial and let Horton and Sterling do the rest of it. I know nobody's really happy with this, I guess, but to me, if, again, is it what anybody exactly wants? No. Are there ways it could be done better? Absolutely. The question is, who's going to do it? And is it better or worse to have nothing on the land, which is entirely possible? To me, it's entirely possible, given other examples of what you would think are kind of sweet locations for things to happen, and then nothing happens. So that's how I look at this. You know, I might regret everything I say in 5 years, you know, right? But sometimes, you know, the thing that you don't love that turns up there, compare that to the alternative of having nothing. That's the comparison I'm looking at. 522 on News Radio 92.3. I'm Andrew McKay.
In a world of payroll and HR services, things can get complicated. There are so many moving parts in business. At Avalon HR, we understand, and we have your back. Join us on the Pensacola Expert Panel as we guide you through the complicated world of payroll and HR services. Running a business is busy work. Allow Avalon HR to work with you. Join us Wednesday on the Pensacola Expert Panel at 10.
The Pensacola Expert Panel, 9 to 11 weekdays on News Radio 92.3 AM 1620.
Did you know that feeling sluggish or weighed down could be signs that your digestive system isn't working at its best? But taking Metamucil every day can help. Metamucil supports your daily digestive health using a special plant-based fiber called psyllium. Psyllium works by forming a gel in your digestive system to trap and remove the waste that weighs you down. Metamucil's gelling action also helps to promote heart health and slows down sugar absorption to promote healthy blood sugar levels. Start feeling lighter and more energetic by taking Metamucil every day.
Do you struggle with occasional nerve aches in your hands or feet? Try Nervive Nerve Relief from the world's number one nerve care company. Nervive tablets contain alpha-lipoic acid to relieve nerve aches, weakness, and discomfort, plus B-complex vitamins to support healthy nerve function as you age. Live life with less nerve discomfort with Nervive Nerve Relief. Learn more at NerviveHealth.com. And try Nervive Pain Relieving Cream to block nerve pain signals at the source. Use as directed.
Listen to local talk, national talk, local news, and national news on News Radio Pensacola. Online, newsradio923.com, or by downloading the News Radio Pensacola mobile app.
What I thought, sir, this country, you've got to make the money first.
Good morning, 524 here on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News. David Wayne's in the newsroom this morning with our headlines. David?
Good morning. Senator Lindsey Graham says the U.S. should consider sending troops to defend Taiwan. He was on Fox News Sunday, and he says if the U.S. doesn't up its game in the region, there's going to be a war. Graham also suggested blocking oil shipments to China from the Middle East and sending F-16s to Taiwan. A top Biden administration official says a Texas judge's ruling on an abortion pill could set a dangerous precedent for all FDA-approved drugs. Health and Human Services Secretary Javier Becerra said on CNN's State of the Union that the FDA approval process could be turned upside down if a judge is allowed to impose his opinion. Becerra said his department has already filed an appeal against that ruling and says there's a good chance it could end up going to the Supreme Court. And four people have died after an avalanche in the French Alps. Another nine people were hurt. Authorities said that took place in the middle of the day near Mont. I'm not sure if I'm saying this right, but Mont Blanc? Mont Blanc?
Mont Blanc.
Mont Blanc, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like the pens. Mont Blanc pens? Okay, move on. Sorry.
And hey, the Super Mario Brothers movie. Everybody's been excited about this one. It was the top film in North America over the weekend, earned over $146 million in theaters across the U.S. and Canada. There I haven't seen it, but actually this might be one I go to the theater to see.
Oh, Julio liked it.
Yeah, Julio did like it.
He said snarky.
It's what you want if you're a Mario fan, which is, I think, every person alive. So
yeah,
very good.
Much, yeah,
David, but no Italian accents, right?
That's I got scolded by you when I did one on Friday, you know?
Well, yeah.
Like, that's inappropriate.
There's a difference between a dirty look and a scold, and you know that.
I don't know. I don't know how to obey instructions. 526 on News Radio 92.3. Yeah, okay, so the dueling, competing, alternate, completely incompatible abortion pill rulings on mifepristone. I don't think a lot of people have done a great job of explaining the why, and I'm not sure that I can do it well either, so I'm going to give it my best try. You have one judge that says, you know, you're going to keep these things in place for these 17 states. You have another judge, the Texas judge, who says, no. The fetus may be a person, and therefore they have rights that have not been considered, and therefore we're going to put this, and also some of the processes used in approving this drug are questionable, and therefore we're going to put this drug on hold in all 50 states. But I'm going to stay this ruling and give, some time to let it play out a little bit, which is common, okay, especially when you have big shift or controversial kinds of rulings. A lot of times the judge will say, well, this is what ought to happen, but I'm going to put that on hold because I recognize that would be a big change in what we're doing right now. And so it's in limbo at the moment. We don't really know where it's going to be in, say, you know, a month. The expectation on all parts is that eventually, you know, when you have two incompatible lower court rulings, eventually that's going to wind up at the Supreme Court, which would be no surprise on something like this. Of course, the problem is Supreme Court takes a while. Now, what might happen is this all might get put on hold until it can work its way through the process. So there might be no change over the next couple of years before it gets to the Supreme Court. There's always a chance it could get an accelerated hearing at the Supreme Court. That's a little bit less likely. There's also the chance that the stay could come off and the ruling could go into effect, and the drugs might not be available for a couple of years. I mean, any of these is a possibility. So what's, to me, and again, I don't feel qualified to get into the legal arguments. I haven't tracked it all that closely, and frankly, out of the, I don't know, five or six different articles I read on the subject, none of them did a good job of explaining particularly the legal issues involved, which is kind of disappointing. So I can't do a better job for you, and I'm not going to go read these rulings. I'm telling you, they're probably both like 70 or 80 or more pages. But here's the overall problem you have. You should not have judges in the United States of America in a rule of law system issuing directly competing rulings on very similar, if not identical, questions. Because that's not how you're supposed to run a rule of law country. And now, I understand that sometimes that does happen, and that's why you get higher court rules and decides between the lower courts. And okay, that. But the notion that you could have a judge over here say, oh my God, no, on something that's been in place for 20 years, even though as a pro-lifer, I hate these drugs. Okay, I mean, I hate that they exist. Okay, but I'm a pro-lifer, but also somebody who believes in the rule of law. And the idea that you could have 20 years in place of permission on a drug, and then all of a sudden, because of shifting legal landscape, you would have a judge say, oh, no, wait a minute, that can't be right. I mean, that can't be healthy. So even though I would prefer an outcome where these drugs aren't available, you've got to also believe in the system itself. And it's, and you know, the whole idea of believing in a representative democracy, a constitutional republic, is you've got to believe in the system, and you got to believe that the system's functionality is more important than the particular outcomes in that system that you want to have happen. And so this is just no way to run the system. That's the problem that I see. David, what do you have coming up in your news, sir?
News, I'm Paul Stevens. Ongoing anger in Tennessee after two black Democratic state lawmakers were removed from their posts for holding a gun control protest inside the Capitol. One of those, Representative Justin Pearson.
That is an intentional and systematic effort of people in the majority party to retain as much power as they can in order to be able to dictate and control what it is that their majority black populations and progressive populations do. In fact, the speaker, Cameron Sexton, called himself at one point an overseer.
Justin Pearson on NBC's Meet the Press. Chinese war games hiking tension near Taiwan.
The military also simulating precision strikes against Taiwan this weekend. All of this is in reaction to what's been just a historic week for U.S.-Taiwan relations. Back in the U.S., more lawmakers say they would support sending U.S. troops in to save Taiwan.
Fox's Aisha Hosni. America's listening to Fox News.
Good morning. It's 5:31. News Radio 92.3 right now. Cloudy skies. It is 59 degrees in Pensacola this morning. Well, as you heard, Escambia County's made a decision on that OLF 8 project. D.R. Horton will be developing the property.
It's got a space for a nice little town center. It's got retail. People are dying for better retail options out here in Beulah. Restaurants, like I talked about. It's going to have some medical office components.
Commissioner Jeff Burgosh talked with Channel 3. The county offered $42 million for that property. That means about a $27 million profit. Commissioners will be meeting soon to go over D.R. Horton's plans for the property. An elderly man expected to survive after being stabbed on Sunday. That happened at North U and West Lee Streets. Escambia County deputies tell Channel 3 the man was stabbed in the side by a suspect, taken to the hospital with non-life-threatening injuries. Deputies say they are looking for a suspect. So far, no arrests have been made. Well, it's a tradition that dates back more than a decade here in Escambia County, the annual Daddy-Daughter Date Night. And this is held by the My Brothers and Sisters organization. It was held over the weekend here in Pensacola. And Kimberly Cox says their goal is to encourage fathers to take a more active role in their daughters' lives. Apparently that sound isn't going to work, but the event was held Saturday evening at the Sanders Beach Community Center. The organization plans to also hold a mother and son night out event that's going to be held in July. And there's more information available on their website at mybrothersandsisters.org if you're interested in that. The search for a teenager wanted in the three deadly shootings in Marion County is over. Sheriff Billy Woods announced yesterday a 16-year-old, Taj Bruton, was arrested Saturday in Lake County. Marshals and deputies there caught the teen. Woods says Bruton was wanted for his role in the shootings that killed two teenagers over a week ago. It is 5:33 at News Radio 92.3. Let's get a look at our Channel 3 first morning forecast.
This is meteorologist Brooke Richardson with your first morning weather update. Small chance of rain throughout the day today, 10% chance overall with a high near 64. Temperatures overnight dropping near 56. We're going to be warming up for your Tuesday with a high near 74. Still a 10% chance of rain around. Temperatures overnight Tuesday dropping near 61. 75 for your high on Wednesday with a 20% chance of rain with Wednesday night temperatures dropping near 65. Stay connected to the Channel 3 News first morning weather team. Download the WEAR-TV weather app. This is Brooke Richardson from the First Morning Weather Center.
And right now, we've got cloudy skies, 59 degrees in Pensacola, 59 in Gulf Breeze, and 58 in Milton. Our next news at 6 o'clock. We've got breaking news anytime it happens. I'm David Wayne for News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable.
News Radio Pensacola is your source for informative, local, dependable news and talk. Pensacola Morning News with Andrew McKay gets you a breakdown of the local issues from the county commission meetings to new developments. Pep Talk gets you local expert opinions on everything from gardens to HVAC. Brian Kilmeade interviews the national newsmakers. Dave Ramsey helps you become debt-free. Pensacola Right Now infotains on your drive home. Local and Fox News at the top and bottom of every hour. And traffic on the fives during your drive time. News Radio 92.3. Informative. Local. Dependable.
Advertising, marketing, digital marketing? These are words you hear a lot about. But what exactly do they mean? How do you get started? Where do you get started? Well, you could start by tuning in to the Pensacola Expert Panel this morning at 10:30. Join me, Tasca King. I'll show you how to navigate the changing and fast-growing landscape of digital advertising. This morning at 10:30 on the Pensacola Expert Panel.
The Pensacola Expert Panel, 9 to 11 weekdays on News Radio 92.3 AM 1620.
As a small business owner, what keeps you up at night? Just knowing if your email got hacked or your phone system went down, it could cost you thousands in revenue, as well as your reputation. That's where Data Revolution comes in with their unique position to take care of you and your business IT support, phone systems, cybersecurity, and more. Secure it and sleep better at night by going to datarevs.com. Winner of the 2021 Best of the Bay for IT support, datarevs.com.
News Radio 92.3, 95.3, AM 1620. Stream online at newsradio923.com or download the News Radio Pensacola mobile app.
Cow for attorneys. And by not taking this provision out of the bill, we will all see billboards along I-95 now saying, let's talk about the books, because the attorneys are going to get rich off of this.
This is the expansion of the parental rights bill in the House that they were talking about, the one that would push it up to eighth grade as opposed to third grade to ban instructional material about sexual orientation and gender identity, among other things. Okay, there's a lot of stuff in this bill. It changes the presumption on books. It does a lot of different stuff. And one of the concerns is that by allowing one-way attorney's fees, basically when parents... or not even parents, but when citizens don't feel like they've gotten what they want out of the school district, they can bring a lawsuit. And if they win, then they get paid. Their attorney's fees get paid, as opposed to if the school district wins, then their attorney's fees get paid. That does not happen. And the concern is, hey, you're giving people a tremendous incentive to put up a billboard and say, don't like a book, call me, you know? And that's one concern about this. We talked about this Friday with our state representative, Alex Andrade, District 2, the southern half of Escambia County and the beachfront, basically, areas of Santa Rosa County. Alex, welcome back to the Pensacola Morning News, sir.
Hey, good morning. Happy Friday.
Happy good Friday. So this is an argument that is, I don't know if it's decisive to me, but it is concerning for me, that we are establishing too much of a frivolous lawsuit, one-way lawsuit, when parents or even complainants are just not happy about how the books are being managed in the educational system. Are you not concerned about that?
No, not at all. It's a specious argument. So, and this is why. So if anytime we allow the government to try and collect attorney's fees as a prevailing party on a private citizen, Democrats will be the first ones up in pitchforks saying we're trying to chill speech. In this circumstance, you have a power dynamic where you have, you know, individual parents potentially going up against, you know, a school board potentially trying to fight with them. School boards have the largest governmental budgets in almost every single county. The school board in Escambia County has a larger budget than Escambia County Commission. These are very large entities. They have, you know, they have their own lawyers. They're more sophisticated than individual parents. And if parents are forced to go down the route of having to go bring some type of a lawsuit, like a Beck action, to try and enforce the law, putting the additional risk of you know, attorney's fees, having to pay the school board's attorney's fees, which will be much higher than their own, it's just something that didn't make sense.
Why not take out all the attorney's fees in both directions?
Well, if they're meritorious, if the parent is right and they were forced to sue the school board to just simply enforce the law, then they should get their attorney's fees back.
Okay, that's just. I guess it's just a different picture of. I had always pictured school districts as being afraid to get into litigation because of the cost of defending things, and they themselves internalize this chilled speech kind of concept because they don't know what the right thing is and they don't want to get sued because they're afraid of the cost of it. So that's just a different picture of school board spending than I'm familiar with. But
well, if a parent is threatening a meritorious lawsuit and the school board's concerned about litigation, they can go to the attorney general for an opinion. Like, they're a government entity, they can ask an AGO for an opinion. Fun fact, these AG opinions that are issued, they have almost like a 100% success rate at being right whenever a question of law is appealed. So there are plenty of opportunities for a school board to avoid litigation. There are plenty of opportunities for a school board to fight back against frivolous litigation. But the fee shifting on statutory right to fee shifting is just something that they're not entitled to at this point. And the billboard lawyer arguments from a plaintiff's lawyer like Hillary Castle were just kind of silly.
Well, I'll take your word for it. That's fine. I mean, that's an answer. I had been looking for an answer on that, so I'll take your answer for it. You've been working on some things that haven't gotten a lot of attention. One has to do with a $6 million, as I understand it, a penalty dealing with Skanska still. Is that right?
Yeah. And so we all know that Skanska violated some terms in their contract because they didn't finish the bridge on time and because there was about 9 months where they didn't have four lanes of traffic across Pensacola Bay. So there are these things in contrast to liquidated damages. If certain things aren't met, for every day that they're not met, you're levied a penalty on the contract amount. It was like $35,000 a day for not having four lanes across the bridge. On that alone, that's about $9, $10 million just for the bridge being down. So I proposed in our budget this year that $6 million off this Skanska contract should revert back to District 3 DOT to go towards unbudgeted construction projects that improve safety or mobility in Escambia or Santa Rosa County. And thankfully, I have a Senate counterpart in Senator Broxton, where I'm very confident that can get done this year. So it's in our House proposed budget. It should be taken up on the Senate proposed budget when we go to conference, and hopefully that'll mean a couple additional projects for it's going to be a center of the county.
All right. Nice. I mean, it's a way to get something. There are other ways we wish we could get even more from them, but that's a way to get something non-insignificant. So
this is a method of getting it before they actually go through their contract dispute process.
Okay.
I went to them and I said, you guys owe at least, $9 million. So why don't we just go ahead and get $6 million and make it productive, because we know you owe at least nine. Before they settle up on the contract with DOT. So I'm trying to fast track.
So this is known money coming in the end. Eventually, let's get it now since we know it's coming. That makes sense. One of the questions about if Governor DeSantis decides to run for president, that, would he under Florida law have to resign the office? That's the first question that seems to be in some dispute. And second, if he does, or if we're concerned that he might, changing the law in order to accommodate him and not having to have him resign. But that is not in the elections bill that's been proposed on the Senate side at all. I don't think it's been proposed yet on the House side. But you tell me, do you think the law needs to be changed for him to be able to run? And do you think it will be changed this session, if so?
So there's a question about whether or not he would have to resign prior to accepting like the nomination at a Republican convention, assuming he wins the Republican primary for president.
Okay.
But regardless of any of that, you have a running mate who would take over, right? The lieutenant governor would take over. So the two questions really are, do we need to make sure that resign to run is lifted so he can remain governor in the event that he, decides to run and doesn't go through with it fully? And do we want to discuss whether or not to have an election for governor rather than just allow a lieutenant governor to operate the state for two additional years? Those are two questions that are being discussed right now. I don't know the ultimate resolution, but there's still plenty of time on the clock in session to come up with those answers.
Okay, yeah, and I agreed. That second question is an important one to figure out what we really want to have happen in case things turn out that way. I'd also wanted to ask you, and I knew you'd be the guy to ask because you've been in the middle of this conversation, and I think you even ran the bill, if I remember correctly, but the Reedy Creek district bill with Disney. And now they apparently, 11:30, basically before they lost control, signed into agreement a deal that gives them the power to control things as long as there's an heir of King Charles III still alive, which is a super weird thing to imagine being done in a contract in the United States. But the reporting has been, they outmaneuvered DeSantis and the legislature on this. What's your read of this situation?
Nobody out legally maneuvered anybody. The entity only exists because the legislature in the state created it. No city in Florida, no county in Florida could have signed the same agreement with the notice that was provided. There's plenty of methods of overturning it. I really viewed it as kind of like a nothing burger. It felt a little bit more childish than anything else from my point of view. It'll be addressed just fine. I think it was honestly an overreach or miscalculation on, Disney's part, just because, again, it's not like it's going to stick. There's plenty of methods of overturning it, both legally and legislatively. Just how combative they wanted to be in changing the makeup, right? Like, these are the original Reedy Creek Improvement Board were just company employees and company controlled individuals that operated a government, issued tax exempt bonds. We now have a true local government type run entity there. I don't know why Disney hated that so much. But at the end of the day, no, it's not, it is not at all some type of win or embarrassment for anybody. We change special districts all the time. And even in litigation, I've modified the territory of the Miami-Dade Expressway Authority before just because of, some appellate arguments that were being brought up in disputes between MDX and the state. So we're the 14th largest economy in the world as a state. We have a massive budget. If Disney thinks they're bigger than the state of Florida, they're going to find out at some point that they're not.
Well, so instead of being an oh snap moment, it's one of those oh I don't know how to snap my fingers moments, and that's why I wanted to ask you, because I knew you would know, much like the question about the one-way litigation issue. Alex Andrade, he is our state representative for District 2. That's the southern half of Escambia County and the basically beachfront areas of waterfront areas of southern Santa Rosa County. Alex, as always, thanks for the time. Thanks for joining us here on the morning of Good Friday, and we'll talk to you again next week.
Thanks, Andrew.
Absolutely. 547 here on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. If you're thinking about that next vehicle, I strongly recommend Frontier Motors. And why? Well, one of the reasons is the way they stand by their products. A lot of times you have that idea that at a used car place, you're going in there and you're just trying to, get out with your skin intact, right? That's the idea, is if I can just manage to get out there and didn't feel like I got taken advantage of. Well, here's the thing, okay? You won't feel that way at Frontier because they actually designed their whole process around avoiding that and making it feel like this is fine, this is easy, this is no big deal. But then I know from personal experience that the follow-up after the fact is extraordinary. They will follow up with you 6 months, a year later, to see if everything's okay with the car. I know because I have friends who, they bought used vehicles, and even though they were relatively new, they still had issues, and Frontier took care of them. No problem. They called me a year later, basically, and said, is there anything with the car? I'm like, well, one of the physical keys, and they replaced it on them, no cost. It was a small thing, but it was a year after we bought the car. And I just had somebody the other day said, hey, I had an issue with the one of the cars from Frontier, and I'm like, all right, well, let's find out what's going on. And he's like, oh, never mind, they called me. They're taking care of me. It was just, I'm like, well, that doesn't seem like them. He's like, oh, okay. And then, I didn't do anything, and they just called him. And so the point is, they're going to treat you like a friend. They're going to want you to be so happy with the experience of buying this car that you buy another one, and then another one, and then another one. And, you never buy a car from anywhere else. That's Frontier Motors, serving the Pensacola community for more than 25 years. Behind that big buffalo on Beverly Parkway, be sure to tell them Andrew McKay says hi.
Hi, this is Earl Ron. I'm the president of New South Window Solutions. What I like people to understand about our company is what's unique about us. We manufacture, we install, we guarantee. We go out of our way to make it easy. The most important thing that New South offers is very simple, absolutely true factory direct pricing. From our factory to our truck to your driveway. Most other window companies are either resellers, a wholesaler, a contractor, a distributor, a sales organization. We eliminate those levels of marketing, so you're paying true factory direct pricing.
Going on now, save 35% off factory direct windows and doors. Call 1-800-NEW-WINDOWS.
The cost of healthcare is all in the news. Tune in this morning at 9 as ProHealth will be the guest and be discussing how ProHealth medical membership programs can help you take out the stress and the cost of healthcare. That's this morning at 9 as ProHealth will be the guest on the Pensacola Expert Panel.
The Pensacola Expert Panel, 9 to 11 weekdays on News Radio 92.3 AM 1620.
Hey, have you heard about the new Charter Academy at Pensacola State College?
No, what's so special about it?
Well, you can earn your high school diploma, transferable college credits, and an associate's degree all at the same time. And it's completely free. But hurry, because they're enrolling 11th and 12th graders now for August classes.
Wow, how do I get enrolled?
Hi, I'm Karen McCabe, the principal at the Charter Academy. Give me a call, 484-2366, and visit us on the website, charteracademy.pensacolastate.edu.
Bands on the Beach is back. Bring a lawn chair or towel and enjoy live music at the stage on Pensacola Beach. There's plenty of room to spread out and enjoy the sand, the sunset, and great live music every Tuesday night at 7. This week, Disco Kiss takes the stage. Don't miss Disco Kiss. Play the best songs from the biggest bands of the 70s, 80s, 90s, and 2000s. Bring a blanket or lawn chair, but please no pets or glass. And be sure to stop by the Cat Country tent. It's Bands on the Beach every Tuesday night at 7 at the Gulfside Pavilion.
Wherever you are, you can listen to News Radio Pensacola online at newsradio923.com or on our mobile app.
How do you get shirts so clean, Mr. Lee?
Ancient Chinese secret.
It's the kind of song where you know like 60% of the lyrics. You know?
Oh, are you listening? Not that I don't care, though. Blah, 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 blah.
You know, like the cool parts. You know, it's like how, you know that part. It's like We Didn't Start the Fire by Billy Joel. You know the cool parts, and you don't know all of the words. You just know the parts where everybody knows all the parts, or those parts, right? So
that's
right,
and all those little list songs too. Yeah,
exactly.
It's the end of the
right.
world. Leonard Bernstein.
Leonard Bernstein. Yeah, everybody knows Leonard Bernstein, right? And the rest of the song, well, you just mumble it real good.
As we know it.
David Wayne is in the newsroom with our headlines. David.
The Justice Department has opened a criminal investigation into the recent online leak of intelligence documents on the Russian war in Ukraine. A Pentagon spokesperson said Sunday the documents that are more than a month old now appear to contain sensitive, highly classified material. There's quite a few economic reports to keep an eye on this week. Wholesale inventories will be released this morning, followed by the National Federation of Independent Business Optimism Index tomorrow. And then later on this week, the Consumer Price Index, Treasury Budget, and the minutes of the Federal Reserve's last meeting in March. Hey, today is, well, this week anyway, there's a big birthday going on, and there's going to be a party. Can you guess whose birthday it is?
Yours.
Nope.
Brent Lane's.
Well, let's see.
Captain Crunch, delightfully sweet, sugar sweet, and fun to munch because it keeps its crunch.
Captain Crunch will celebrate his 60th birthday on Saturday, April the 15th, with a pool party at the Margaritaville Resort. The party will feature Captain Crunch-inspired brunch items, a DJ, and live music. The free event is being held on the first weekend of the Coachella Valley Music and Arts Festival in Indio. Captain Crunch was first introduced by the Quaker Oats Company in 1963.
Okay, point of order.
Not our Margaritaville.
Not our Margaritaville.
Right.
Yeah,
a,
I should specify that.
Not
yeah.
our Margaritaville. And B, I would not say Captain Crunch is 60.
Yeah, he was old when I was
a
kid.
Yeah, he was 60 when he started. He's 120. Okay? I mean, Captain Crunch was no spring chicken in the beginning.
So that's true.
The brand might be 60. Captain Crunch is definitely a centenarian.
Yeah, get it together, David.
Come on, David. I thought this was a news segment.
Failed again. All right. Back to the drawing board.
Although he ages less than even, you know, Casey Kasem, right? So, all right. maybe he's an android. David, thanks so much for the update. And the good reference to Indio. You know, I haven't heard Indio in a while.
Hey, that's
there
you
true.
Go. Yeah, 554
News Radio 92.3. Do I want to get into all this? We've had more information come forward on the Clarence Thomas allegations of inappropriate receipt of personal favors and luxury yacht trips and vacations and whatever. You remember this story that came out on Thursday from ProPublica, and they said, you can literally hear the pearls being clutched in the article. Okay, so the subsequent reporting on this is a couple of things. Number one, no federal requirement to report gifts from friends.
What?
There just isn't. And in fact, what's interesting about this, the context that ProPublica didn't give you, is that until the last month, federal judges didn't even, they literally changed the rules within the last month to require that for federal judges, to which the Supreme Court, I mean, these are rules that they're not obligated to adhere by, but they tend to do it anyway. And so that's a direct acknowledgement that there was no such obligation prior. So, did Clarence Thomas do anything wrong in not reporting it? Well, what do you mean by wrong? Like, did he violate a rule? No. Did he do something inappropriate? No. Could he have, on his own recognition that this might look weird to people, come forward and said, we've gone on some luxury trips with some rich friends that we like to hang out with, and I just want to make sure people are aware of that so they're not surprised if it ever comes to light later. I'm not trying to hide anything. Well, sure. I mean, you know, he could have done that. But the other question, the real issue is, what sort of conflict of interest, what kind of bias, what kind of influence, right? That's the real question. And in this case, do you think somebody is influencing Clarence Thomas to what? Be more conservative than he would otherwise be?
Yeah, if anything, it's loosening him up.
Right. His track record long before he was a Supreme Court justice was as far to the, you know, conservative side, whatever, if you view the legal interpretation that way, as you could possibly be. So remember that the issue with donors and conflicts of interest and bias is not are the people receiving some benefit. The real question is there a conflict in between that and their rulings, or between that and their, you know, what they're doing in the court? I'll give you a comparable example is Ruth Bader Ginsburg officiated a gay wedding before she participated in the Obergefell ruling, the Obergefell versus Hodges, that legalized same-sex marriage under the Constitution for the entire country. Now, is that a conflict of interest? That she took a personal stand in favor of gay marriage so much so that she officiated a gay wedding prior? I would say this, it's more of a conflict than this, and if you look at all of the hand-wringing over this compared with what wasn't really said about that, it's an interesting comparison, right? So, you know, what should be done in this case? Nothing. I mean, nothing. That's the whole point. There's no violation. And for some of the, again, you know, pearl-clutching sort of Democrat response to this, like, we're going to impeach him. Really? For what? And then just wait for an answer, because there's no end. Now, I will say this. There's been this push for enhanced or, you know, clarified or some established form of judicial ethics reforms, especially when applied to the Supreme Court, because there are some outstanding questions about that. And, you know, remember when we went through this a couple of years ago when Biden had the Supreme Court Review Commission, where they looked at things like should it be life tenure and how many judges on the court. And they looked comprehensively at the Supreme Court and said, what do we need to change? And one of the areas, it didn't get an awful lot of press at the time. We talked about it, but, you know, just saying, you probably didn't hear much about this other than on this show, is they were looking at, you know, what kinds of ethics rules should apply to the Supreme Court. And, you know, what kind of transparency should there be, especially on accelerated dockets and a couple of other issues. And basically, the takeaway from that is we probably ought to have more in this area. And I think it's true. We probably ought to have more in this area. And I mean, that's fine. the ethics rules for Supreme Court justices, there's no reason not to have a clearer set of guidelines in that regard. So if anything, what this does is just kind of reinforce the momentum that was to some degree building for a push in that direction. How much teeth would they have? Would you need to amend the Constitution? All of that kind of stuff remains to be seen. But it's an interesting conversation.
Dependable traffic on the fives.